call this meeting of the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy to order. A quorum is present. Members, we do have two bills on the agenda today. And just to note, we're going to be adjourning at 11:15 because we have a floor session at 11:30. But before we get to Representative Edelson's bill, do I have a motion to approve last meeting's minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Oh, I think I heard Representative Pinto first. So Representative Pinto's motion is to approve the minutes for January 12, 2023. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. All right. Our next bill is going to be House File 121. And before we start with this bill, just to remind members, if you have questions, please make sure to raise your hand, look at us, look at staff, and acknowledge that you want to be called on. I definitely want to make sure that since we're not in Zoom anymore, we don't have that raise hand function electronically. So we definitely want to make sure that we're able to see you and that you get on our list for questions. Representative Grossel, well done. That is exactly how it is done, Representative Grossel.
Testing, good testing.
Job. Excellent. Well, welcome, Representative Edelson. And since you're not a member of our committee, I will move your bill. I move that House File 121 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. There are no amendments to your bill, so please go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and it's good to see all of you. I miss being on public safety. I won't lie here. House File 121, I think we all remember the last few minutes of session, those of us that were here. In the last 6 minutes of session, we passed a pretty big mental health package, and in that was this competency restoration provision that's before you today. What we have done here, there are some technical fixes within this bill, like we see with a lot of the legislation that we pass here at the legislature. But one thing is really important within this bill is the appropriation date has moved from 2024 to 2023. So right now, the competency legislation that we passed would take effect in July of this year. In January, we were supposed to be appointing a board. At this point, we're working with the governor's office on that. But we're held up because the funds are not going to be appropriated until 2024. So we do need to move this bill so that we can start building that competency restoration program and hire the executive director, making sure that we're getting the navigators and that the judges can use this really important program that we worked tirelessly on for about 3 years. So, and I have two testifiers, Madam Chair.
All right, great. And thanks for all your work on that bill, Representative Edelson. So it looks like your first testifier is going to be Sue Abderholden, the Executive Director for NAMI. Welcome back to the committee, Ms. Abderholden. And can you please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Sue Abderholden, Executive Director of NAMI Minnesota, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. Back in 2019, the legislature actually passed a bill that was promoted by NAMI that authorized a task force to look at competency restoration. We wanted to know what resources were currently in place, what were the current trends, conduct case reviews, and research what other states were doing. We met for 2 long years. We had a variety of stakeholders. Everyone you can think of, frankly, was at the table, and we issued both an interim and a final report. Then we all began to work on a bill to actually implement those recommendations. The language passed in the remaining three or four minutes of the 2022 legislative session. On a high level, we created a State Board of Competency Restoration. We disconnected commitment from competency. We created forensic navigators to work with people to develop bridge plans, plans that look at housing, insurance, treatment, food benefits, et cetera. And then we developed community competency restoration programs, including locked intensive residential treatment facilities. That was the plan. The purpose is to effectively use our resources to move people into treatment and connect them with resources and put an end to the revolving door and connect people who were deemed incompetent but not committed to services. It was truly a monumental bill. We think it's one of the broadest in the country, but like any large bills, there are technical amendments that are needed, and that's really what's before you today, and urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. And it looks like our next testifier is Ryan Flynn. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair. My name is Ryan Flynn. I'm a prosecutor with the Ramsey County Attorney's Office. I've been a part of the process of examining the sort of gap in legal authority to cover people who have been deemed incompetent to proceed under a criminal procedure. I've been a part of that process actually since 2017 when the Minnesota County Attorneys Association got together a group of prosecutors representing all different corners of Minnesota, the metro, as well as greater Minnesota. I've been a prosecutor for over 12 years, and I've done everything from speeding tickets to multiple homicides, and I can say that the gap of authority for judges to be able to order treatment and to help people regain competency affects everything from your traffic laws, your disorderly conducts, all the way up to domestic abuse, including homicides. Even since passing this bill back in the spring, there continues to be tragedies that have impacted families in the state of Minnesota because of the lack of ability for people to regain competency and be held accountable, as well as receive support so that they can be stable members of the community. So we urge the passage of this bill not only for its technical clarifications, but predominantly because of the ability to put funding towards this issue so that we can get this process going as soon as possible. Thank you.
Great. Do we have any members from the public who wish to testify on this bill? All right. I'm not seeing any, so we can move on now to member questions. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not a question. I just want to both acknowledge my colleague, Mr. Flynn, and thank him for his work. I work with him at the Ramsey County Attorney's Office. But really, I think these folks cannot be thanked enough. This is just such important work, and you've worked so incredibly hard and led by Representative Edelson. And just thank you so much for your work. And thanks, Madam Chair.
Representative Brust. Or, sorry, you raised, but you pointed. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you, Representative Edelson, for bringing this forward. I know you and former Representative Albright put a lot of work on this, and staff has done a lot of work with you on this over the summer. I really appreciate that. Having some experience working and dealing with these gap cases, it can be very frustrating, and there's obviously a need for something to be done there. My only question that I have is it's an unspecified appropriation right now. Do we have must have some framework as to how many FTEs we're going to need for this and who will it be administered through?
Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Novotny, I believe it was going to be $30 million in total that was going to be appropriated, and it was going to be approximately $10 to $11 million that would be appropriated this year to get the program started.
Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chairman Mueller. Thank you, Representative. That'll be all I have right now.
Any other? Yeah. All right, anything else? Closing comments, Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. This is a really important piece of legislation Representative Pinto, my first time presenting this year, you guys, and in person, Representative Pinto and Representative Novotny said it's a really important piece of legislation. We really want to get the funds out that we can start using this program. I know our judges want to use it. I know it will help make our community members get the resources and the help they need and really protect public safety. So I urge a vote yes.
All right. So I will renew my motion that House File 121 be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you so much. Members, our next bill on the agenda today is House File 181, and we will be laying this bill over. We don't have a fiscal note, so we will expect to bring this bill back once there is a fiscal note. And because Representative Fang is not on this committee, I will move that we bring House File 181 before the committee, and the motion is to lay over House File 181. Welcome to the committee, Representative Fang. And before you tell us about your bill, I do believe that you have the A2 amendment.
Yes, that's correct, Madam Chair.
All right, so I will move the A2 amendment to put the shape in the bill that the author desires. Can you please describe your amendment to us?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment takes some wording and takes it into from crimes to incidents and just put in the shape that I would like to introduce the bill as. So thank you so much for your support.
Okay. All those in favor of the A2 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The A2 amendment is adopted. All right, Representative Vang, please tell us about your bill as amendment, as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm here today to talk about an issue that is not new to the committee, but continues to be a timely and pressing issue today that is addressing the hate and bias incidents against our protected communities that we continue to see. We had an opportunity last year to address the rising hate and bias incidents against Asian Americans being targeted for the coronavirus, but that was missed. And even though it may seem like it's post-pandemic, many Asian Americans still feel left unprotected. The rise in anti-Asian sentiment is an example of many communities of the protected class who have and are experiencing hate and bias incidents. The Combating Hate Coalition consists of members from the Jewish community, LGBTQ, Muslim, Asian, Black, who have all contributed in the making of this bill. And I also want to recognize Representative Frank Hornstein, who spearheaded this legislation in previous years. So the three main elements of this bill consist of, one, allows for community reporting of the hate and bias incidents and to report that to the Department of Human Rights. As we've seen during the pandemic, when the Asian American community was targeted for the coronavirus, there was no effective infrastructure in place within the state to report what was actually happening to our community. We have videos on social media, anecdotal evidence of violence, harassment, and slurs, but there is no official place to document the amount of hate and bias incidents being reported by community members. This will improve the way how the state collects and reports on hate and bias incidents in order to effectively combat the rise in hate and bias incidents to marginalized communities. The second thing this bill does is allows Post Board to update the process to address the training and curriculum needs in response to hate and bias incidents. And lastly, addresses a loophole in hate crimes committed on property. A little over a year ago, the only Hmong Cultural Center, for example, in Minnesota, was defaced with a slogan associated with a white supremacist group. This is not the only incident, and many similar incidents of hateful messages sprayed on properties occurred over even in recent years to target certain groups of the protected class. This bill will address that all hate and bias incidents are taken seriously. And with that, Madam Chair, I will yield my time to my testifiers who will explain more about the significance of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Vang, and welcome to the committee. I believe you are Beth Gender. Please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Beth Gendler. I'm the Executive Director of Jewish Community Action. We organize the Minnesota Jewish community alongside our multi-faith, multi-racial partners for justice for all Minnesotans. When the Darul Farouk Mosque in Bloomington was attacked in 2017, followed by a succession of bias-motivated incidents targeting synagogues, other masjids, cultural centers, and individual members of Minnesota's AAPI and LGBTQI communities, we began conversations with our partners about how we could not only come together to support each other, but take meaningful action together to stop hate. In 2020, we formed the Communities Combating Hate Coalition, which now includes nearly 20 organizational partners. Our coalition recognizes that we need to update the laws that help us combat hate in Minnesota. House File 181 will update current hate crimes policy to include crimes against property, some of which are exempted by the language in the current bill. It will provide grants to culturally specific community organizations through the Department of Public Safety, which will allow them to work with law enforcement to report and track bias-motivated crimes and incidents. It will include updated training for the Post Board so that officers have the information they need to properly identify and respond to incidents of hate. The bill also updates the language that identifies protected classes and ensures that those definitions are uniform throughout statute. The bill does not, nor do we seek, enhanced penalties for bias-motivated crimes or new penalties that would in any way infringe on anyone's freedom of speech. We need to close the loopholes in the current hate crime statute that make it impossible to accurately reflect the state of hate in Minnesota. And we need to empower community organizations and law enforcement to partner, to work together to ensure accuracy. If we can't name it, we can't fight it.
Thank you. And I believe your next testifier is Majid Gale. Here yet. We also have Nu Vang. Hi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House Public Safety, Finance, and Policy Committee. My name is Nu Vang, Director of Policy and Advocacy at the Coalition of Asian American Leaders, known as CAL. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Part of CAL's work is to build collective power and improve the lives of community members to live a just and joyful life. Recently, there have been an increase of hate-motivated attacks, both verbal and physical, against Asian American community members. In Woodbury, a Hmong family came to a hateful note calling them a racial slur and told them to take the virus back to China, posted on their doorstep. In another incident, a grandmother was physically attacked on the light rail, and there have been hate incidents in schools across Minnesota. An Asian Indian student was told by his parents to go back to Mexico due to the color of his skin. And at Edina High School, there was a video of students who were doing the Nazi salute and mocking Asian Americans. In a national survey conducted by Stop AAPI Hate in 2021, one in three parents said they were concerned that their child was going to be a victim of anti-AAPI hate in an unsupervised area or on the way to school. Also, keep in mind that this could be an underestimation because victims fear retaliation or worry about rocking the boat if they speak up. These incidents have lasting impacts on victims, and they need services to support them. It's important for the state of Minnesota to be a partner with our communities to combat hate. Victims need a lot of support to deal with the lasting impacts of being subjected to hate. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe Commissioner Lucero is going to testify, too. Hello, Commissioner. Please introduce yourself, and you can begin with your testimony.
Okay. Good morning, Chair Mueller, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rebecca Lucero, and I'm the commissioner for the Minnesota Department of Human Rights. To those members who I've worked with in the past, it's good to see you again. And to those who I haven't had the opportunity to work with yet, it's good to meet you and Happy New Year. So as you've heard, this bill has many components to it, and I want to focus on the pieces that are specifically related to the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So here, the goal is to solicit, receive, and compile reports from community organizations, schools, and individuals regarding incidents around discrimination, bias, and or hate. Using the data collected, it can help you and community groups inform next steps, whether that's through education, outreach, or some other decisions you decide to make, but with a data-driven decision-making process. And so to talk about this, I think it's best to take a step back and talk about what the Minnesota Department of Human Rights already does. And that can help clarify the gap that this bill is working to address. So the Minnesota Department of Human Rights enforces the Minnesota Human Rights Act. The act prohibits discrimination based on protected class statuses. So here, think things like race, national origin, religion, disability status, and age. Now, where does the act apply? It applies in areas such as housing, employment, and schools. It is not criminal. It is a civil act. What happens is when someone reports discrimination to our agency or what they believe to be discrimination, our investigative team conducts a neutral fact-finding investigation to determine if there is a violation of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. So as the state agency responsible for enforcing civil rights in Minnesota, we are deeply committed to ending discrimination and bias to ensure that everyone can live lives with dignity and joy free from discrimination. Importantly, the Minnesota Department of Human Rights and its act does not do its work everywhere. It does not apply everywhere. So as you've heard some examples, but let me give you a good real-life example of where the act does not apply. And as you've heard, this happened a lot during the height of COVID. So if a person is standing on the street corner, ready to cross to the other side, maybe going to the grocery store, we heard these stories a lot, and somebody else drives by and says something derogatory about their perceived race or ethnicity and how it's related to COVID, that's a situation where somebody then immediately starts feeling very fearful, especially when it happens over and over again. They're trying to pick up their kids from school. They're trying to get to the grocery store. And it led to just these little incidents of just really kind of starting to terrorize somebody in their own community. But in this situation, the Minnesota Human Rights Act does not apply. Is this a crime, and is it a hate crime? I am not the person to speak on that, but I will note that it gets complicated for a variety of reasons. When it comes to crimes, whether or not something is determined to be a hate crime would involve the police arriving, citing or arresting someone, an investigation, and prosecutors charging as such. So in this example, it is highly unlikely that even if it is a crime, and I'm certainly not saying that it is, but if it is a crime, the police are not getting called. If they are getting called, there will not be an investigation. There will not be citation, arrest, or charge. So it will never be documented, tracked. No one will ever know about it except that person who experienced it and their community members who feel the residual effects of that. So how often does this kind of situation happening? We don't know. And importantly, because we don't know, we also don't know what other tools we could be using, especially around education and outreach. Education is an area that is incredibly important to MDHR. In fact, it's a statutory mandate that we focus on education. And so part of what is helpful for us is knowing where to focus our resources. But since we don't have the data about the frequency and type of incidents, we are unsure how to properly provide that kind of outreach. You also don't have the data about the frequency and types of incidents. And so you are also lacking the information you need on how to best move forward. And that's true of community groups as well. So then linking back to House File 181 specifically. So as you've heard, this is a community-driven proposal that seeks to better understand what is happening when it comes to incidents of discrimination, bias, and hate. And as you heard today, this bill comes out of what we quickly saw play out across the country during the pandemic around anti-Asian hate incidents. Now, of course, xenophobia, racism, and other forms of discrimination are not new, but the pandemic brought to light what communities have known and experienced for centuries and built new kinds of relationships and partnerships across the board on this. And as you can see, the government does not have an ability to understand what is occurring. Hate crimes themselves are tracked by the FBI and here at the state level by the BCA. And of course, if someone calls about an incident covered by the Minnesota Human Rights Act, we would track and conduct that investigation. But for the many incidents that occur that may not be criminal, nor are they covered under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, there is no coordinated, consistent tracking, reporting, analysis, and recommendations on next steps. So this bill is looking to get at that issue, to ensure we have the information to work with community groups that are leading on this work. And the goal is to report back to all of you on what may be effective moving forward. So lots of thoughtful community-based work to get to this point, and I appreciate the partnership around this, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Vang, do you have other testifiers that you know of? We'll open it up for the public, but... Okay, great. So now we'll open it up. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on this bill? All right, I'm not seeing any. And I'll just remind members before we get to questions that we do have letters in your packets, and those are also for those online. Those are also available online. Moving now to member questions. Representative Mueller.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your testifiers here. I did want to, after you reminded us about our letters, I did want to draw your attention to one of the letters, which is from the American Civil Liberties Union, that does have concerns about the expanded scope of this, also is concerned about how this will impact civil liberties. It says in the letter, the expansive provisions of House File 181 introduce the prospect that speech, an association unrelated to particular action, may be inappropriately used to infer bias motivation. While individuals' words or actions may be repugnant to some, if they are not directly connected to a specific action, using them to impose criminal penalties does raise constitutional concerns. And I know the testifier, especially Commissioner Lucero, you did talk about how this has nothing to do with criminals, and yet in Section 3, it's talking about felony assault motivated by bias, increased statutory maximum sentence. It says in subsection 1A, criminal damage. It does talk about criminal damage to a property in third degree. There's lots of stuff here that has nothing to do with civil liberties. It has everything to do with criminal penalties. So how are we responding to what the ACLU is concerned about? This is an expanded bill about, frankly, a lot of undefined things, and I think some of my colleagues will be talking about this. And people who are a community group that is to protect civil liberties is concerned that this will infringe on civil liberties. So I'd like to know how you'd like to respond to that, please.
Representative Fang.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Mueller, for your question. I think I can be open for more clarity about making sure this doesn't infringe on constitutional rights. But for now, I am comfortable with the language as is due to the fact that this is under the advisement and jurisdiction of the Department of Human Rights, who is in charge of protecting the civil liberties and rights of protected classes. And I would just like to point out that this bill doesn't increase penalties of the crime. What it does is it addresses a loophole. I would just like to point out that these are already crimes that we know are being committed, from assaults to property damage. But there is a loophole when it comes to hate and bias incidents for certain protected classes. Thus, we miss deterring acts of hate and bias incidents equally. And so I would just like to emphasize that there's a slight clarification on that end, that it doesn't increase penalties, even if it references crimes and assaults. It makes sure that there is no loophole when there are bias incidents being committed against certain protected classes.
And I'm going to, just before I see if Representative Mueller has any follow-up questions, I'll just note, too, that there are different sections of this bill. So what Commissioner Lucero was talking about was the example she gave where someone reported someone shouting out on a street. That wouldn't qualify as the criminal penalties that are in this bill, the assault and the criminal damage to property, which is definitely included in here, and you just explained. So I just wanted to be clear that people knew that there were two separate things that we were talking about. Representative Mueller, did you have follow-up?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. And I was also going to point that out. You know, this is a bill that has several different sections. Section 1 has to do with the Human Rights Act, and that's my understanding mostly what the commissioner was speaking to. And then, then there's the criminal sections where we're making sure that the definitions are more in line with how we conceive of these crimes. And one thing that I wanted to bring up that I think is important is the actual or perceived language and how important that is. So as an example, I had a friend of mine who is Native and darker skinned than I am, who took the bus and was walking the, you know, 3/4 of a mile from the bus stop to my house. And a truck started tailing him, and the person yelled out the window, "Go back to where you came from," which, although humorous, in that he's Native and he's here on Native land, and so there's no country for him to go back to, was still very scary. And I have no doubt if that person had caused harm to him, it would have been, you know, it's coming from a place where they perceived that maybe he was, I mean, who knows what nationality they thought that he was. But I think that perceived as language is really important, because it was certainly coming not from a good place. And, you know, it didn't escalate that time. He just ignored the person and kept walking. But it certainly didn't make him feel safe in our community. And I think that then goes back to the first part of the bill with the incidents, and really clarifying that we're talking about incidents of hate, where that would be the kind of thing where, like, a lot of folks in Roseville might not realize that things like that do happen in our community. And it would be important for us to track that data and for him to have had a place to report that to, so that somebody was keeping track of those kinds of things happening in our community. For all we know, there are many other people who that's happened to, And we don't know because we're each sort of dealing with those kinds of hateful incidents alone. And so I think that's really what, to me, what this bill is bringing folks together, bringing folks to the table, and bringing this into the light, that this kind of thing happens in a lot of different communities. And then to Commissioner Lucero's testimony, the ability for them to address education, to address, to make sure, like, that our law enforcement knows that that's happening. Even if it isn't a crime, we might want to be aware and more so our city council, so all those folks sort of know that that's a real thing that's happening in a community. So just wanted to bring that up. I know we had had discussions with, you know, this is a large coalition that's been working together on this for a long time, and we'd had discussions, you know, is this better? As, you know, there are different ways to approach this, but I think doing it as, you know, a combating hate bill where we're talking about all the same kinds of issues, even if it touches on different areas of statute, I think is a good way to go. And I just want to thank Representative Vang and really all the folks, too, who've been working on this who aren't necessarily here testifying, but it's really been a lot of work. And, you know, we have made amendments and fine-tuned the language over the last couple of years. It was Representative Hornstein's bill, and then I helped out with it, and Representative Vang's been our champion on this now. And so I think there are a lot of communities and a lot of different groups of people who are impacted by this. So I just wanted to get all that on the record. Thank you, Chair Mueller.
Thank you. Representative Ingen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd like to echo the sentiment that Representative Becker-Finn just made. You know, we don't want motivated crimes based off of race or gender identity, any of the above. Those are all disgusting, and they should be called out for what they are, which is disgusting. But I know, Representative Vang, you actually brought up a word that I'm a little bit concerned about, which is loopholes. Now, on page 3, lines 10 and 11, the bill outlines the means to compile reports on bias-motivated crimes, which, quote, a community member or community organization believes are motivated by all of the above that are highlighted below. What does the bill do to address the potential loopholes where somebody makes a claim that, you know, there was something that was brought up racially motivated biases, but it actually isn't? You know, are there loopholes to ensure that resources aren't being exhausted by those claims?
Representative Vang or Commissioner Lucero, I don't know who wants to answer that. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Inga, for your question. I would just like to say that my amendment, A2, has changed the word crimes to incidents, and so therefore it addresses the concerns that you may have.
Representative Ingen.
No further questions.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you, Chair. Question I have is, the bill requires the Commissioner of Human Rights to provide information on how and when a victim reports the incident. I guess we're taking the criminal part out to law enforcement. Why isn't this immediate? And the reason I would say that is to verify if the incident is actually true or not, but also these incidents can be a spark point in a community. And so getting that information out quicker to law enforcement, but also to communities, schools, can prevent maybe false information that sparks an incident. And it can also get the connection so we can prevent a big incident from happening. Thank you.
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Chair Mueller. Thank you, Representative Taft. For your question. I will defer to Commissioner Lucero, who can talk more about what happens when a bias incident is reported and what that process could look like.
Commissioner Lucero.
Chair Mueller, Representative, are you just clarifying, and it's hard with Robert's rule, so I'll take a nod. Are you talking about 3.19, 3.20 there?
Representative Whitty.
Oh, tried.
Yes.
Commissioner.
Chair, thank you very much. When somebody calls our office right now and believes that they may be a victim of something that may be discrimination and it may or may not be criminal, we already always tell them you should contact the police if you think that this is a police matter. So I have no problem notifying people of situations. And if we are starting to hear of a lot of situations, I may pick up the phone and call the commissioner of DPS right away and say, hey, we're hearing about this. Are you tracking? Usually they are. The problem is not things that are more, if you're looking at buckets, those things are pretty obviously going to get looked at. Now, whether or not law enforcement needs additional understanding of the lens, like a civil rights lens, that fits there. The issue is a lot of things that are in that middle space, that example that I gave you, where there's that person crossing the street. In that kind of scenario, there is no one calling the police, nor is the police necessarily appropriate in that situation. It could be that the right person to contact would be the neighborhood groups. This actually is something that came up quite a bit in COVID. The neighborhood groups in that neighborhood would want to know what's going on in that neighborhood and maybe come together and see what to do. Maybe it's youth activities. Maybe, like, what are we seeing so we can address it? But until we know what's going on, I'm not sure what to tell those community groups. And they're asking me for that information. We're going to them for that. And so we're trying to have better information across the board.
Representative Whitty.
Thank you. I do appreciate that because I do think it does get a little murky at times. And but the thing I would ask you to consider is especially in law enforcement, it just takes one little incident to blow up, and it's a bigger incident, and it's how it's taken. And now you got, if that information isn't shared, it could lead to bigger things. So just to make sure that we're understanding that as we're tracking this to see how many incidents we do have, that we are definitely making sure we're preventing some stuff too. Thank you.
Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Incidents that may not be criminal. That's what I heard. So we're going to create a mechanism for reporting incidents where no crime took place, where the defining characteristic, to the extent there's any definition at all, is that somebody feels as though they were discriminated against based upon actual or perceived. That's the language in the bill, characteristics. I'm deeply concerned about the implications of this bill. We're going to create a database of incidents that have no objective standard determining whether or not they violated the law, whether or not they had anything distinct from just normal speech, an incident of bias. So if someone were to post on social media a particular Bible verse that defined marriage or spoke of God's institution of marriage as being between one man and one woman, or a Bible verse that spoke in condemning terms regarding certain sexual proclivities, would that posting of a Bible verse be considered an incident reportable under your bill?
Representative Vang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just say that it is important to let our community know that we do not tolerate hate and bias incidents in this community and in Minnesota, and that we support communities that has been harassed, intimidated and abused. Everyone is protected, no exceptions. And I can also defer to Commissioner Lucero to help shed light on the increased need to make sure that we are able to document and accurately know what's happening in our communities.
Commissioner Lucero.
Chair, thank you, Representative
Hudson.
Your name takes turn there. There. Thank you, Hudson. Thank you very much. Okay, so just a few things that might be helpful. So just to frame this out, this Section 1 is not about crimes. So the Minnesota Department of Human Rights right now, every single day for 55 years, has been working on issues around discrimination and bias that occur in the workplace, in schools, in housing that are not necessarily crimes. Most of the times they're not crimes. So we already are investigating incidents around discrimination. We use objective standards. We use a prima facie analysis. It's a whole neutral investigation piece around this. So that's what's covered under the Human Rights Act. And what we're looking for here is data around what is outside the purview of the Human Rights Act, but where there is speech and associated related action that is inappropriately used around bias-motivated incidents. And I just, I mean, you mentioned normal speech, and I appreciate that. And so you do need to have objective standards to understand what is normal speech. And I think that there's real clarity around, like, for instance, what's normal speech and what's anti-Semitic speech. And so and that would be what is tracked, so we have a better understanding of, and then what to do with it. So section one is about what's going on here, and then maybe it's additional educational outreach. We're getting a lot of calls from this one school district. Is this something that we can meet with the principal about? It's not necessarily a crime situation here. Section one is not about crimes.
Yep. And Representative Hudson, we'll go back to you, and then I'll note that we have Representative Pinto and Novotny on the list. We have 4 minutes left. Go ahead, Representative Hudson.
Thank you. I'll try to keep my question concise then. You say that there's an objective standard, and yet this bill adds categories to the definitions, or it references the chapter of law that has definitions in it for human rights, and those terms aren't defined. So I don't know how we can objectively enforce something without definitions. And I guess the question I'll ask for Representative Vang, if we're going to distinguish between normal speech as a category and hate speech, how do we do that? What is hate?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hudson, for your question. Coming from a community where we, especially during the pandemic, when we've experienced for the first time in a long time during the pandemic, I have felt unsafe grocery shopping, simply because of the kind of rhetoric that's been used that targets Asian Americans for being blamed for the coronavirus. I think that to explain that type of experience and feeling to someone who has never really had a choice, well, to someone who has to be outside of that experience or that bubble, it's hard to put that into words. But perhaps Commissioner Lucero might have a objective answer to what hate is defined.
Commissioner Lucero.
Chair Mueller, Representative Hudson. So there's actually ample case law and lots of information around speech. You are getting at the fact that it is complicated. It is not easy, which is why you can't just do this on one of these hearings right now. But speech that leads to imminent lawless action that's directed towards a specific person or group because of that protected class status, it has to be direct call to commit immediate lawless action related to and around that protected class status. It is not easy. It is something that prosecutors wrestle with. It is something that constitutional lawyers wrestle with. And we don't even have a prima facie, a baseline analysis to say, hey, could this possibly be that so we can understand it? Does that mean proven beyond a reasonable doubt? Absolutely not. We're just looking to have a better understanding of what is likely going on out there so that you can know, hey, this is what's going on in my community. It's helpful to know.
Right. Representative Pinto.
I'll defer to Lead Novotny given time, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Novotny.
Chair Mueller, I was going to ask if the post board director would be available for a couple questions. I see he's in the crowd.
I think what we'll do, given the amount of time, is let's hold that because this bill, we are laying it over. And so then we can bring that, but we can ask that he show up again when we put the bill on the agenda.
I'd rather not be rushed. So, yes, thank you.
Okay, great. All right, and as I just said, we are laying the bill over, so I'll renew my motion and lay over House File 181 as amended. Members, we have two bills on the agenda for Thursday. It's going to be the Representative Cedric Frazier Day in committee. And with that, this meeting is adjourned.